Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to another edition of the Buzzer Beater Podcast. My name's Elijah Campbell. We're finally playing basketball again. The ball's been tipped. We started off last night. Well, technically 2 nights ago. At the time of the recording, it is 12:03 a.m. Central Standard Time here in Nashville, the Game Nashville Studios. Just got back from Vanderbilt, Southeast Missouri State. And what was Jerry Stackhouse's first game as a head coach at Vanderbilt, his coaching debut, went rather well. 83-65 win for Coach Stackhouse and the Commodores. Got to speak with Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. We'll get to him in just a moment, get to our discussion. We'll go over some quick hitters first. First thought, Vanderbilt came out of the gate strong. Got up to about 26-9 lead, hit 5 of their first 8 threes. Shoot, their first 3 shots were threes. They ran a play for Cleavon Brown, first play of the game to get an open corner 3, and he knocked it down. That was one of my biggest takeaways. If Cleavon Brown is going to play like he did tonight, Vanderbilt's going to mess around and win some games they probably shouldn't. Now, I've said before that I don't think this Vanderbilt team is going to be any good, and it's going to take Jerry Stackhouse a long time to do what he wants to do with this basketball team. I still think there's going to be times this year where they look horrendous. And there's going to be some times where they're going to look really, really bad. But the one thing that Jerry Stackhouse does as a coach, better than a lot of other candidates that applied for the Vanderbilt job, is he is a master of player development. You saw it with the Toronto Raptors when he was coaching with Raptors 905 in the G League. You saw what he did to Fred VanVleet. Fred was obviously a key factor in locking down Steph Curry in Game 6 of the NBA Finals and doing a hell of a job himself, knocking down open threes, getting open looks, getting good looks for others. And then Pascal Siakam, man who got paid this offseason, wouldn't have gotten paid if it wasn't for the development that he got to receive with Raptors 905 being coached by Jerry Stackhouse. I'll make that point later when I talk with Joe. And if we're seeing any of that already, it's Cleavon Brown's three-point shooting ability. He looks a little thinner than he did last year. Looks like he's in better shape. But Brown tonight, 3 of 4 from beyond the three-point line. This man shot 14 threes last year. 14 in the entire year. And he shot several threes in his career. He shot more in his first 2 seasons at Vanderbilt. Last year, out of those 14 threes, though, he only hit 2. And this guy's a career 24% three-point shooter in college basketball in his time here at Vanderbilt. And he knocked down 3 tonight. That's huge. You hit more threes in this game, in the opening game, than you did all of last year. I'd say you're off on the right start. He had 15 points overall, my math is horrendous, and 8 total rebounds. Now, rebounding is a key concern for this Vanderbilt team. They did get out-rebounded by Southeast Missouri, the artists, also known as SEMO State, people in the basketball circles like to call them. But another bright spot for Vanderbilt, and one of the biggest things that stood out to me, and I know we can only take so much from a first game, especially a first game against an OVC team that in many circles is picked last, them and Tennessee Tech, and picked last in the OVC. So SEMO's obviously not a quality opponent, and even watching them tonight, they weren't really good. But some bright spots, Aaron Nesmith. Dude can shoot. 25 points, 8 of 12 shooting, and here's the big one. 7 of 11 from three-point range. Vanderbilt fell in love with the three-point shot tonight, and it paid dividends, especially in the second half. They were tied with CMO at 32 at the end of the first half. In the second half, they scored 51 points. So they had a crap ton of threes in the second half, and a lot of that was from Aaron Nesmith. Saban Lee, obviously not the three-point shooter, totally different player, but shot 50%, 8 of 16, 1 of 5 from three-point line. Not his forte, but he got to the rim. In the second half, he got to the rim often. And him getting to the rim helped open up opportunities for other players. He had 4 assists tonight, second on the team, behind Scottie Pippen Jr., who had a pretty solid debut. 7 points from him, 6 assists. He led the team. He led Vanderbilt in assists tonight. So one of the biggest takeaways for me personally was Vanderbilt shooting. And they're having some trouble on the glass, and they had some trouble defensively too. But, like I said, I spoke with Joe Rexroad after the game from the media room at Memorial Gym, and here's how that discussion tonight went.
Here with the Athletics, Joe Rexroad here at the Old Barn in the media room after Vanderbilt's season opening 83-65 win. Before we get into this, Joe, got to say, it's nice to be at the Old Memorial Gym. It's one of my favorite venues in college basketball. It feels like it's been way too long to come back here and check out a game.
Agree. Love this place. Would love to see it filled again. It hasn't been too many times over the past few years, but when it does get filled, I think back to a win over Florida a few years ago, late in Bryce Drew's first year.
Oh, yeah.
The place was electric, and obviously Kentucky and Tennessee games, but no, that's a lot of visiting fans. But it's always fun to be back in here. And, not a big crowd for Stackhouse's opener, but they made some noise.
Yeah, it's kind of, to be expected for a first game, especially against SEMO, who even in OVC standards is going to be towards the bottom this year. It's going to be very impressive.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's one of those things. I was curious because, it's the first game of the Stackhouse era, so there's some curiosity, some excitement among fans. But, it's also a program that lost 20 straight games coming into this. Mm-hmm. So, that's just going to mute the excitement naturally. So, be interesting to see if they can kind of build that a little bit. They've got a schedule that should allow for some wins.
Especially the non-conference, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some good mid-major opponents on there, but it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of get more people out here.
Yeah, certainly get off on the right foot tonight. I mean, this is the first win in the 2019 calendar year. First one, I guess, since UNC Asheville last season. And I'll go ahead and ask you, what are your initial thoughts for tonight, your initial takeaways from their 83-65 win? They certainly struggled a little bit down the stretch the first half.
Yeah, really good defensive intensity right away, 11-0. I thought SEMO was going to have a hard time getting anything going. And then, they just started attacking, really. And, Jerry Stackhouse talked a little bit after the game about some of the – really, they kind of surprised him a little bit with the way that they were kind of attacking off the ball screens. They expect a little bit more, picking and popping stuff. And they really – were the aggressor for a chunk of that game. But, Vanderbilt, look, they've got two tremendous talents in Aaron Nesmith and Saban Lee. And Saban Lee is an imperfect talent, but he's still a talent. He is he's absolutely an NBA athlete. He's still trying to kind of find his game. And I think it's interesting that Stackhouse, is, I think, going to continue to use him as the sixth man. And he kind of explained that after the game about why he's doing that. Of course, he had an interesting quote. Avery Johnson told him, some people are starting, some people are starters. He's
right,
a starter, of course.
Just not starting, right now.
Oh. Yeah, but those two guys, obviously, they were the story to me. Cleavon Brown looks a lot better to me. He's hitting threes.
He shot 14 all of last year.
That's a good point. He's taking them. He's shooting them. It was the first shot of the game. That was a play Stackhouse called for him. And, he obviously has worked hard on his body. And then, Scottie Pippen Jr., the freshman, obviously that his development's going to be a big story this year. I thought he did some nice things. I thought he looked like a freshman at times. I thought SEMO took advantage of him on the defensive end at times.
Mm-hmm.
He does have a nice – I think feel for the game. He's got a nice vision. I thought he made some really nice passes. His ability to keep growing is going to be really important for this team.
We mentioned yesterday when we spoke that you know, part of the struggle that Vanderbilt had in conference play was Saban Lee was forced to take on the burden of being the primary ball handler for like the entire season. Really high usage rate, had the ball in his hands at all time. There really wasn't someone else that could alleviate that pressure. And it looked like tonight with Lee coming off the bench and Scottie Pippen Jr. starting and handling the ball to begin the game, that might be Scottie Pippen's role to begin this year.
Yeah, and they played together a fair amount. They definitely, you know, subbed in some for each other, but you know, they saw some time together. And yeah, I think, you know, last year the whole plan with Saban Lee was obviously off the ball, but it just, yes, the idea was not to have him as primary point guard.
Didn't plan for Darius Garland to
didn't play for Darius Garland
6 games.
Right, but also, you know, it's Saban Lee is not a shooter, so it's an he's just an, you know, and he took 5 threes. He did hit one. He was better from the line. He's 4 for 6. And obviously that's important. But as a slasher off the ball, and like you said, I think, Elijah, I think that's a big thing is, you know, just it's such a drain on a player if he always has the ball, especially if he's not a natural point guard as he isn't. So I think it will be good for him maybe to watch the game, but certainly I think to be off the ball more and attack, because of the first step is just lethal. I mean, I think he can get around anybody in college basketball. And, you know, he had the split the defenders
monster
on the
dunk
ball screen and just two-handed, you know, power
dunk.
I mean, even Scottie Pippen Sr., you know, was kind of blown away by that one. So he's – it's you know, finding what he does best and deploying him best is really important for this team.
And one thing I've really noticed throughout the entire game, because they opened up the game – chucking it from three. Now, I say chucking, it's got a negative connotation, but they were taking really good open looks, and there was only one shot they took in the first half that wasn't in the paint or outside the three-point line, and they maybe took two of those in the second half. And so it's kind of, I guess, an analytically sound, Maury Ball-esque way to play, but in the first half, you know, it really worked. And even when they were starting to turn the ball over and Simo creeped their way back in and tied it before halftime, they were getting good looks, and they just weren't falling. But the second half, those looks, you know, started to fall. Do you think that's kind of a sustainable way to play? Because over 50% of their shots tonight were threes.
You know, I saw Jerry Stackhouse taking a lot of mid-range jumpers in his NBA career, but apparently he doesn't have much use for them.
It's evolved a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, look, I mean, 34 threes is a lot. Now, if you hit 14, you feel okay about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't think, you know, to me it's all about the quality of the look. You know, Matthew Moyer took a couple that I would not advise.
And Connor's bad Evans. Misses. I felt some of his weren't as, I guess, badly advised as much as they were just bad misses, like clanking it like on the side of the backboard or kind of chucking it over the rim. And
but if that's what happens, then maybe
probably
you
not.
Be. Yeah, I mean Dylan Dessou, the freshman, who, you know, 0-for-5, 0-for-4 from three. Actually, I really liked what he did defensively for a stretch in the second half. He made some heady plays.
His length helps a lot, too. He does have some really good length.
And, of course, you know, Moyer has tremendous length. You know, Moyer is, to me, he's a defensive starter. I mean, he's a defensive – why he's out there. He's very good.
Took three charges
at doubling
tonight
on the ball screens. He's very good at taking charges. You know, he's – but offensively, you know, he just doesn't have a comfort zone. But, yeah, it's just – look, man, get those shots for Neesmith. They got him 11. He hit 7. And, again, Cleavon Brown being able to be pick and pop big
and stretch the floor a little
nice.
Bit. They didn't space the floor well at all last year.
Lane up a little bit, exactly. I mean, you know, anybody who remembers Luke Kornet a few years ago, not long ago, I mean, that changed everything for them. Hard to defend because he drew the big out every time. I don't know if Cleavon Brown is going to be that 3-for-4, one game. But the shot looked good. He's worked hard. There's no doubt about it.
And it'd be nice, especially if you're Saban Lee, if you know the big men aren't clogging the lane, you do have someone like Brown who can step out. And if he's able to draw the attention of defenses out, that should help Saban Lee out tremendously, wouldn't you think?
No doubt. Oh, no doubt about it. And, you know, Scottie Pippen Jr., it'd be interesting to see how he figures into that. You know, his shot looks decent to me.
Fundamentally, yeah. I didn't see anything like a hitch or anything that was just, you know, egregious. Now, except kind of Saban Lee's, you know, is kind of flat. He does have a little bit of a hitch, and it's kind of flat coming off. Goes in occasionally. He hit 1-for-5 tonight, but I didn't see that with Scottie Pippen's.
Yeah, and it'd be big if he's able to chip that in here and there. But I thought a few times I really liked – he has a nice change of speed game. You know, he's not – He's not as big. He's not super explosive. You know, mm-hmm. you look at his dad, you look at him, you're like, man. You know, because obviously anybody who remembers his dad, huge guard with, mm-hmm. you know, at the time was, there weren't many guards like that, 6'8", with that kind of athleticism and skill. He's not the player his dad was. He does have a really nice change of pace, ability to kind of, you know, hesitation moves, go left and right in the lane, and then find people. And, you know, that is, I liked some of the stuff he did there. And again, when you take that off Saban Lee's plate, now he can do what he does better.
And what are some things tonight that kind of, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, should worry you? Tonight, I felt like defensively they had some really bad lapses. Simo got the ball in Dwight's call the money spots. They got the ball in the paint pretty easily a lot of the times, especially late in that first half. Didn't help that they turned the ball over five times in the last, what, 4 or 5 minutes. But it also didn't help that Simo was getting anything they wanted when it came to the interior offense.
Right, 42 points of the paint, 17 second chance points. If you care about rebounding margin, you know, 38-35, but they had 14 offensive rebounds.
McDean Oliver
33
throw up.
Misses. Yeah, it's, and yeah, there were some, just like you said, some lapses. You know, Ejike Obina a couple times lost his guy. Yeah, so did Cleavon Brown. I mean, there were some times where I think they just lost guys, and there were other times that guards just got driven. I mean, Neesmith's got to be better defensively than he was tonight. I thought there were a few times, because he's capable. He's capable of playing good defense. There were a few times that, you know, he let guys get by him a little bit too easily. So, yeah, they've got to shore some things up. And some of that is also communication. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is going to be a packed-in man-help defense. And if you execute it well and communicate, I think they have the players to, you know, to execute it. And I think, you know, Cleavon Brown – let's see, if you get two blocks, he's going to block some shots. I mean, he did that before he was in this kind of shape.
He slimmed down a little bit,
yeah,
noticeably.
But concerns, I mean, look, you know, you're starting. Yeah, you don't have enough players of the highest quality compared to other SEC teams. I mean, that's that's a reality. You know, the starting lineup, Matthew Moore and Maxwell Evans are defensive players. They are good defenders. You know, offensively, can they be efficient and can they, you know, play the way they need to all play with, I think, better cohesion. And those two guys, you know, at times, I think sometimes take some shots. We talked about Moyer, you know, that maybe an extra pass here and there. You know, inside they are, you know, they're thin. I mean, it's Brown and Obina and, you know, Otan Yankovic, if I'm saying that correctly.
I think so. That's how I was pronouncing it verbally, and I think that's how Coach Stackhouse said after the game.
2 minutes and, you know, struggled a little bit, but he's got some skill. He made one nice play.
Made a nice pass.
A really nice pass, and I forget to who, but I was like, that's a really nice skip pass.
It was an assist.
Yeah,
so he got an assist. He had a turnover.
I think he found Brown inside, maybe?
He found Brown at corner three.
A brown corner three, thank you. But, you know, so he's got a little feel. You know, it would be great for them to get him a few more minutes to give them a different look up front. But, you know, look, they're going to have to lean so heavily on those two guys. And then Scottie Pippen, I just, you know, Stackhouse talked about it. Hey, Neesmith and Lee could be gone after this year. Neesmith, I think, more likely.
Because that shot, I mean, like the way he's got tonight, especially
body.
If he speeds it up. Because he's as great as a shot he is, it does kind of come off slow at times. But if he's able to be able to get a pop time of maybe 0.8 seconds, you know,
and I thought
get out of Paul Millsap
quicker.
Range, he's going to be able to find a home in the NBA. Anyone would love to have, you know, that kind of shot off the catch.
Yeah, with a guy with that size and everything. I mean, so you know, Pippen is kind of Stackhouse's pet project here, and if he can keep growing, he seems very confident, and you know, and he seems to have a good rapport with his teammates. So, you know, if he can keep coming, I mean, you know, I think they'll be fun to watch. And you know, they're going to have to really scrap it out to win SEC games. It's a tough league, so people have to be realistic too.
As tough as it's probably, I mean, ever been, and it's going to take a lot of player development. And of course, if there's anything that Coach Jerry Stackhouse, as a coach, has an upside with, its player development. You saw what he did with Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and the guys that were in the Raptors G League that, you know, he got to coach. If there's anything they did, it was get a hell of a lot better from the time they entered and the time they left. So that's certainly something to look for later in this year. And before I let you go, now that you've seen him play once, we've seen an exhibition game, we've seen a real big boy game, where would you kind of put them in the SEC if you were to have voted in the SEC poll? before the season started?
I'm probably last.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm still there too. Obviously tonight there's only so much we can learn when you play an OVC team that is has low as expectations as SEMO does. But I think that's still pretty reasonable.
It doesn't mean that they have to be bad. It's just I don't know who I'm putting behind them right now. I do think, you know, I think that they can get some SEC wins this year, unlike last year. I think that's a reasonable goal. I don't know how many, but
they could beat at least Texas A&M. Feel like there's some
teams. Some teams they can beat here, and there are going to be nights, you would think, again, nights when, like tonight, but an overall better performance, you know, when Neesmith and Lee are both getting it going, and that can be a really lethal combo for them. You know, other guys have to come along. I think if Cleavon Brown can be this every night, that really bodes well. But, yeah, it's hard for me to – I don't know who I'm putting behind them right now.
Fair enough. Joe, thanks for talking with me. It's game one of many.
That's right.
And it's going to be a long season. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
That's all for with Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Great subscription to service. I highly recommend it. But when I come back, we're going to give out some technical fouls, our favorite segment of the show. Stick around, there's more.
Looks like he wants a technical.
And there's going to be a technical foul.
And a technical foul call.
You like that technical foul call, why?
That's a tech? Did he call a tech?
Oh, and he got teed up as well, coach.
Whack, get out. Technical foul, Wallace, he's gone.
Yeah. And gets the technical foul for that'll cost him some money as well.
It's that time again. It's that time. It's time for me to hand out some technical fouls. My favorite part of the show, always. And after 2 days of college basketball, I finally have someone in the college basketball ranks to dish out a technical foul to. As many people watched last night, or 2 nights ago technically, Kansas and Duke squared off in the first game on ESPN. Now, before I get into this, major props to ESPN. They are the real winners of last night. And so is all college basketball fans for being treated to the first top four teams in college basketball all playing each other on opening night. That's pretty cool. But what's not pretty cool is how Kansas played. Kansas was going into the game against Duke was the team that's supposed to be the experienced one, the more experienced college basketball team, number 3 in the country. None of their starters are freshmen. David McCormick saw some time last year. Udoka Azubuike is a preseason All-American at Kansas. Marcus Garrett started a lot of games last year. Agbaji started some games late in the season once Bill Self realized, hey, this guy on my bench can play a little bit. And Devin Dotson shared point guard time with Quentin Grimes last year. Of the two teams that played on that floor, Duke was supposed to be the one that's inexperienced. Shoot, the only guy that started last year came back was Trey Jones. But what Kansas did, and the reason I'm getting ready to slap them with a fat T here, is turn the ball over way too many times at a historic rate for this proud Kansas basketball program, I should say. They turned the ball over, according to the broadcast. Now, College Basketball Reference has it a little different, but the broadcast credited Kansas with 28 turnovers. 28. College Basketball Reference has them at 26, which in their turnover percentage metric is about 29.7, which is horrendous. Very bad. With playing approximately 79 possessions, and you're turning the ball over 28 times. That's so, oh my, I have to slap him with one. This is supposed to be the experienced team, the one with veterans. I understand that teams are sloppy in November. November basketball isn't for, you know, being your best, even though Duke kind of did that last year. Might have peaked in November. But my goodness, man, how are you going to come into a game, it's a top four team, and just lay a total egg on offense? I get it. They only lost by 2. They tried their best to give that game away. And I'd be willing to say only a handful of those turnovers did the Duke defense actually force Kansas to commit? Only a small handful. A lot of them were self-inflicted. Some awful, awful protection of the ball for Kansas on Tuesday night on a big stage. Obviously not the biggest in college basketball, but as big as it gets in November, as big as it can get on opening night, you lay a total egg in front of the entire country. In the four factors of winning basketball games, they had Duke beat in all of them. They shot better and shot efficiently. An effective field goal percentage of 50 compared to Duke's 42. They rebounded the ball on offense a hell of a lot better, 34.5% to Duke's 26.8 in terms of rate, not just raw rebounds. And they got to the line a lot more efficiently. They shot 0.32 free throws per field goal attempt, where Duke was only 0.219. But the one thing Duke did better was take care of the ball. And in turnover percentage, Duke only turned the ball over 17.8% of the time. Kansas, according to College Basketball Reference, great website, that's where I get a lot of my stuff, turned the ball over 29.7% of the time. Overall, Duke only turned the ball over 16 times, and Kansas 28. So really, if you think of it, if Kansas doesn't turn the ball over so many times, they don't turn the ball over 3 out of 10 possessions, they win that game by double digits. I tweeted it last night at @E_Campbell3. Nice little Twitter plug I'm throwing there. That Kansas turned the ball over against Duke 28 times and still only lost by 2. Many teams turn the ball over 28 times, get smacked, lose by double digits. It's embarrassing. You turn the ball over 28 times, especially against a top 5 team in the country, you're getting the hammer dropped on you. But Kansas didn't necessarily get the hammer dropped on them because they played a better game. Shot better, created second chances with their rebounding, as Ibuki had a pretty solid game on the boards. McCormick had a great night on the boards. Grabbed 3 offensive rebounds, 10 defensive, grand total of 13. But the experienced playmakers for Kansas couldn't keep themselves from turning the ball over. And I know I get 2 technical fouls in this section, in the segment, but I want to give a 1A and a 1B. And the 1B is to point guard Devin Dotson. Got to give him a 1B technical foul here because he was the ringleader of the turnover party. Dude played 38 out of 40 minutes, turned the ball over 6 times. 6 times. David McCormick also isn't going to be without blame. He played 28 minutes, turned the ball over 3 times. And Azubuki played 30 minutes and turned the ball over 4 times. Azubuki's turnover percentage was 42.9. Given the amount of minutes he played and the amount of times he turned the ball over, the turnover percentage, 42.9. I know a lot of people aren't as familiar with the turnover percentage stat, but let me give you a hint as to what that means. It's not good. And for a team that's supposed to be number 3 in the country, that is playing a team full of freshmen, although they're talented freshmen, a team full of freshmen, they were the ones that kept turning the ball over. So my first technical fouls of the college basketball season are going to go to Kansas. And I want to shift over to the NBA. I'd like to talk to the NBA a little bit on this show, especially when it comes to technical fouls. And for this episode of the Buzzer Beater podcast, I'm slapping a fat technical on the entire Portland Trail Blazers team. Why? Well, because they lost to the Golden State Warriors. Now, any year that's not 2019-2020 season, you're thinking, well, shoot, in the past 5 years, everyone's lost to the Golden State Warriors. But if you've been keeping up with the NBA, you know that Steph Curry has a broken hand, and he's going to be out several months. Klay Thompson's not going to play all year because of the torn ACL, and Kevin Durant bounced for Brooklyn in the offseason. So the Golden State Warriors are depleted. Now, yes, they still have Draymond Green, and yes, they still have D'Angelo Russell, whenever they play him, which hasn't been recently. They're in full tank mode. right now. The Golden State Warriors are now in full tank mode. None of us thought we'd ever see it. But they're going not just full tank mode, they're going full 1996 San Antonio Spurs tank mode when David Robinson missed almost an entire year due to a serious injury. They end up getting the number one pick the next year, and after winning the lottery, selected Tim Duncan, a forward, power forward from Wake Forest, and the rest is history. They won a lot more. And it's some weird 96 San Antonio vibes with this Golden State team, too. But I want to read off the starting lineup that this Golden State Warriors team trotted out the other night against Portland. And Portland started everybody. Now, granted, I think it might be a crime to still start Anthony Tolliver and play him 17 minutes in 2019, but the Blazers did that. But I want to give you the starting lineups for both teams, actually, and we'll make a comparison here. The Blazers starting Damian Lillard, who I think, outside of Steph Curry, is the second-best point guard in the entire NBA. C.J. McCollum, one of the best shooting guards in the NBA offensively. Rodney Hood, Anthony Tolliver, crime, and then Hassan Whiteside, who has maybe some limitations offensively and is pretty much just a solid pick-and-roll center, but still a great shot blocker. Still not a bad team. This is a Blazers team that's been winning some games this year. They're not bad. About 500 going into this game. But let me give you the Golden State Warriors starting lineup. At point guard, you couldn't even tell who the point guard was. None of these guys played point guard. You'd probably say Jordan Poole was the point guard, or maybe the primary ball handler. Rookie out of Michigan, late first-round pick this year. Most known for the buzzer-beating shot he hit against Houston 2 years ago in the NCAA tournament on their magical run to a national title game where they got waxed by Villanova. But speaking of that Villanova team, Eric Pascal started. Pascal. I don't know. I'll stick with Pascal. Eric Pascal started. Second-round pick of the Golden State Warriors in this year's draft. Glenn Robinson. Might have heard of him. He played in a national championship game at Michigan where they got beat by Louisville, and according to the NCAA, that game technically never happened. So did he really play in the game? Who knows? But we all saw it all happen. Glenn Robinson III started. Willie Cauley-Stein at center played in some big college basketball games. Traditional pick-and-roll guy, good shot blocker, whatever. He's not starting on winning NBA teams, I'll tell you that, because he started for the Sacramento Kings a couple times in these last couple years. Weren't winning basketball teams. He only played 15 and a half minutes and flirted with a lot of foul trouble. But the fifth guy, Kai Bowman. And I know everyone that's listening to this podcast probably has never heard of Kai Bowman a day in their life. And I don't blame them. He wasn't drafted, played at Boston College, so you're practically the closest thing to playing on the moon you can get in the ACC. They don't get nationally televised games. They barely get televised games. But Kai Bowman, great player at Boston College. I actually really liked him. I thought he was an excellent college player, but he was undrafted. He's not supposed to be starting in 2019-2020 on any team. Guy's supposed to be battling for starting spots on a G League roster. I was more expecting to see Kai Bowman start games this year on the Santa Cruz Warriors, their G League affiliate. But no, he's starting on the Golden State Warriors. And this ensemble, this cast of misfit toys for the Golden State Warriors, came out and beat the Portland Trail Blazers, smacked them in the fourth quarter. That group of dudes, along with Marquise Chris, who I've always thought was just a bad basketball player, big dude, high upside, could never get it together. Omari Spellman, awesome shooter, could be a really good player if you ever just got in great basketball shape. And then Damian Lee and Alec Burks. Those are the guys who came off the bench, played minutes. Those dudes scored 40 points against the Portland Trail Blazers in the fourth quarter. That is comical. And an offensive rating of 128. That Warriors team was scoring 128 points per 100 possessions against the Blazers. Now, I know that I base a show on local basketball, but I think that was funny enough to write is have to slap the entire Portland Trail Blazers team with a T. Before we go, I will say Eric Paschal had an incredible night on his birthday. 34 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, 3-point shooting. Incredible. That is all we have here on the Buzzer Beater Podcast with Elijah Campbell here on 102.5 The Game. Thank you guys for listening. There's always more where this came from. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can listen to this. I'll be tweeting the link as well, and you could also get it from 102.5 The Game at 102.5 The Game, and I'll be tweeting it on my personal account at @E_Campbell3. Thank you very much for giving it a listen, and see me again soon.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.